Yeah, thank you. Michael, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on, Kent. How are you enjoying life as the president of the Wynyard Footy Club? Plenty of work on?
Yeah, look, it always is. Look, it's a pleasure to be involved with a regional community club, small club like Wynyard. It's certainly, you know, one of those town clubs. It's the biggest thing in town sort of thing, and certainly resonates with me having come from the Smithton Football Club where you're part of a small town.
Yeah, that's right, and I can remember those origins of Smithton. Just getting to your football now, footy, why? You had a couple of brothers, triplets, the three of you. Why Aussie rules?
I think there was a couple of factors. When we were kids, our three sports, we just loved all the same coming through were Aussie rules and cricket and football. And I think as I got older, I found cricket a little bit boring. I like to be moving, running around a bit more. So I found, you know, the cricket, even though I was an all-rounder, I just standing in the field. I think a lot of kids go through that. And then with basketball, I didn't like the fact you can get fouled off the court. In football, you can't get fouled off. So it was sort of the physical nature of football and that you couldn't get, you know, fouled off. You know, that sort of decided the basketball wasn't for us. We sort of liked the, you know, physical side of it. And then of course, the Smithton Football Club, when we were 10, 11, 12, was just coming into the end of FU at the time. And some great players came down from up the coast and played for the club. And obviously we got to see those terrific players from along the coast every other week, and so it was that Smithton Football Club being coming into the league at that time when we were pretty impressionable sort of 10, 11, 12-year-olds also played a role.
And the family heritage, it's West Indian, is that right? And where does that all hail from back there? Because there's a lot of, there's Sudanese, there's West Indian, there's all sorts of cultures these days in footy. Yours traces back to West Indian, it's amazing.
Yeah, so my mother, Diane, she went over as a young woman from Smithton in her early mid-20s, and as the migration was in the time, and still a bit, over to the UK to have a working holiday and spent a couple of years over there. And while she was over there, that's when she hooked up with my soon-to-be, I suppose, father, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Jimmy Fairweather, and she got pregnant, and... when she found that out, she just actually decided that she'd want to bring us up back home with her family. So she left the UK, or left London, and came back home. So that's sort of where the suntan came from initially, Michael.
And look, just the other two, the two brothers in the family, or are there other siblings that you have? This is not a sort of way back into your genealogy or whatever. But any other siblings?
No, look, good question. Look, we certainly have. We got on my dad's side, on Jimmy's side, he had a couple of daughters, Natalie and Thea, and we're good mates with them. We keep in touch with them. We met them later in life, around mid 20s. Had some trips over there and caught up with that side of the family eventually. And so Natalie and Thea, and they've got kids of their own now. And we obviously, with social media, are able to keep in contact with them. Grandmother over there, cousins, the whole lot, and obviously. I've also been to Jamaica four or five times now, and got a big family over there as well. So that's been a wonderful, thing in sort of not later life, but as adults in our mid-20s, really connecting with the Jamaican side of our heritage. And on Mum's side, Mum remarried, and she had another son, who's about 5 years younger than us, called Dean, who we're obviously pretty close with as well.
That's just fantastic the way it's all panned out. And look, the first time we saw you playing footy in the NWFU was with Smithton, you said, 1987, and you strutted yourself. What was it like? Can you remember your first game you played in the Saints colours?
Yeah, look, I'm pretty sure it might have been against East Devonport up at... Gerlison Park. It was a time when the big name players up at East, I think, were Peter Borlini and I think Tim Allen may have been coaching. I'm not sure. Wayne Carty was coaching Smithton, a guy from South Australia. Actually played with South Adelaide. Wayne Carty, big tall guy, about 6'4", 6'5", and and he'd come down through a family connection to coach the Smithton Football Club. And so he was doing that, and he gave us a start young. We were only 16 at the time, and yeah, he gave us three boys a start really young. As a matter of fact, Grant was the first to play. He debuted round one. You know, we were 15 years old coming out of the local circle at under 17s, and we, you know, got a bit of surprise to be playing senior footy that quick. And Grant actually didn't play any under 19 games, just debuted in the seniors round one.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know what? I've got this horrible feeling. I think I might have played in that game. I played with East Devonport. I think I can remember Wayne Carty. He was just he was a strong man, Wayne Carty, wasn't he? He was an extremely good footballer as well.
Yeah, very good dexterity for a big guy. Light on his feet and had all the skills. He's getting towards the end of his footy career when he came down our way. Mm. But look, a terrific guy, and a guy a bit later in life when I was playing over in the Sandful that reached out to me, and we caught up on a couple of occasions as well, so it was nice.
We'll touch on the Sandful a little later on. You eventually moved to Hobart. You played with Clarence. What prompted the move down there to play with Clarence?
Oh, look, I suppose at that stage, you know, there wasn't a lot of, as you know, there wasn't a lot of AFL on TV, and I know as kids, you know, as 16 or 15-year-olds before we played with Smith, and all we wanted to do from sort of, 1981 to 1986 or whatever, our goal was just to play, be our life's ambition to play a senior game with Smithton. And of course, once we did that, we're still only 16, and we had some, you know, aspirations with our footy. We were pretty keen to play as well as we could, and really enjoyed the competition. And then, as it happens, because I was 18 and I made a rep side, and we went down to Hobart and played against a TFL under 23 side, and I think they beat us pretty comfortably, but myself and a bloke called Neville Keep from Penguin, we drew for what was called the Wanda Medal at the time, for best on ground in the rep game for the Union at the time. And in that game there was some people down there connected with Clarence that saw me play, and that got a bit of interest with Clarence and a few other clubs. Burnie had already been on to us and Devonport, but North Launceston also were interested in me coming there. Steve Goulding was coaching, Chris Goulding's father, of course.
Yeah, and a very good player himself too. I remember Neville Keep, I think left footer, and I think he might have had a beard or something in later on, but he was a terrific player. Hey, listen, we'll touch on the Sandful stuff after the break. We'll just take a commercial break, play a song, and then come back and have a chat with you, Kent, about your South Australian experience. I'm speaking to Kent Jackson. He's my special guest on our Where Are They Now? Back shortly. Welcome back to the Sideline View. Michael Maney with you, and my special guest is Kent Jackson. Kent is current president of the Wynyard Football Club and had a wonderful football career. Both he and his two brothers were very, very good players in Tasmanian League. And Kent, thanks again for coming on. You left Tasmania to head across to play for South Adelaide in 1993. So I asked you before the break what prompted your move to Clarence. What was the story with going to South Adelaide, the Mighty Panthers?
Yeah, well, certainly, coming down to Clarence, first the move down there, they were just so professional. A bloke called Roger Curtis was the vice president. I think Dennis Rogers, who was ended up being president of the ACB, he was a very impressive guy as well. And Billy Atwell was the secretary. They're just great guys off the field. And then, you know, Peter Daniels was coaching. And the boys, Darren Winter and the boys, Blair Brownless, a bloke called Robin Kidney, they all made me feel really welcome. I spent a weekend down there, so that sort of got me to Clarence. Just their professionalism and obviously playing on Bell Reeve didn't hurt as well. So that got me down there, and then I had a couple of years there. And Lee McConnon, Coco McConnon, took over, of course, and he was a great confidant and a great coach. Very hard coach, Coco. You wouldn't want to lose a game of footy. Monday night it was like you were a marathon runner if you lost a game of footy. You were scared to lose.
Yeah.
So he was a very hard coach if you lost, Coco. He would thrash us on a Monday night, and I've never, you know, I learned the value of external motivation, because you think you don't lose this game. and so anyway, after a couple of years with Clarence, unbeknownst to me, that some scouts from South Adelaide had been over, and a bloke that ended up, he was coaching South Adelaide at the time, but ended up being Malcolm Blight's assistant or football manager at the Adelaide Crows, a bloke called Johnny Reid.
John Reid, yeah.
Came over, Johnny Reid, and he actually, him and Malcolm Blight actually married sisters, so it's a bit of a story there.
Yeah.
But him and Harry Kernahan, father of Stephen Kernahan, that Harry was the general manager of South Adelaide at the time, so they came over and made themselves known to me, and I just sort of yelled out to Lee Coco O'Connor to say, could you come to this meeting with me, Lee? I'll, you know, make sure I represent myself the right way, and just have another pair of eyes and ears there. So Coco came along to the meeting with me, and they were pretty keen to get me over there, and I thought, well, you know, I'm already away from home anyway, I might as well go and have a look over the other side. And I realised it was a few steps ahead of standard-wise of our local competition, so I was probably 21 at the time, I was pretty keen to go over and have a look around.
How long did you stay there for, Kent?
Well, that's 3 years there.
Yeah?
3 years there, yeah. Johnny Reid coached the first year, and he got the sack, and a bloke called Kenny Sheldon, who's one of the famous... Yeah. Blue baggers.
Yeah.
Played in three premierships with Carlton, of course, coach St Kilda, and Kenny came over, and he was a fantastic coach to play under.
And I guess I was chatting to you during the course of the week, and we're teeing this up. One of the real great Tasmanian players, Daniel Holm, he was over in South Australia at the time too. I know he's a good friend of yours, and unfortunately has passed away, but he played for Central District and was their first captain for their premiership in 2000, and Danny Holm certainly left a huge legacy, Kent, hasn't he?
Oh, look, he was just, like, when I went to Clarence, I was 18, and Daniel, I used to call him Daniel's son, he was a year and a half or so younger than me. He was only 16, I think, not even 17, and he was playing senior footy with us and had that maturity of a man, the way he fitted into the team both on and off the field. He was just a kid at a young age that had a real good head on his shoulders and just so popular with everybody. And yeah, just a real solid, terrific guy. And it was just such a blow to everybody that knows him, and obviously especially the family, with these early passing.
Yeah, it was terrible, and I suppose then you come back to Tasmania, and you do a lot of other bits and pieces, and including coaching the Tassie under 23 side. That must have been a bit of a thrill to get an opportunity to do that.
Yeah, look, it was. I was so lucky at the time when I came back. I came back to play with Peter German and my brother Grant at the Dockers, and then when Germo left, I went down to coach Smith, and unbeknownst to me, I had a little bit of cartilage damage in my hip and had to hang up the boots. So I just concentrated on non-playing coaching with Smithson, and ultimately got a chance to coach the NWFL rep team a few times, led to the opportunity to coach the state under-23s. And just the big thing about the rep footy I really enjoyed is that region versus region rivalry, and then just the making friends and relationship with people in other teams. It's just something I would recommend to anybody.
Yeah, look, it's brilliant. And, you know, once it's in the blood, it's there, isn't it? I mean, you still are carrying on your the family legacy, just being involved in a football club, being president of Wynyard. So it's brilliant. Now, listen, one thing that we continue to talk about is racism in our country, in particular sport. Now, I know you've got some very strong views on this, and they're very smart views too, and it starts with the education scenario, and you've been advocating this for a long, long time, Kent. It all starts with the parents, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, look, absolutely. I think nobody's born sort of bigoted, whether that be against women or, you know, against people from minority groups or whatever. So it is really about role modelling and education, starting around the dinner table. They put a lot of pressure on schools nowadays, but I think really it's starts at home, of course.
Yeah.
And look, I've got to say, you know, as we were talking a little while ago, Michael, that when we played local football in Smithton, we didn't get much racism at all as young kids. But as soon as we started playing along the coast, we sort of got it hand over fist, and a lot of the stuff at the time you didn't realise how bad it was, because it was just something that you know, no one else really carried on about it. We weren't too happy about it, me and the brothers, and we would try and manage it as best we could. But it wasn't something that even alarmed your teammates too much. A couple of your teammates might have a word to you about it, you know, but there wasn't a lot of support, official or unofficial support for you. And then you sort of got a little bit older and you thought, well, you know, this is a bit annoying that nobody else gives a stuff.
Yeah.
And then we saw with sort of the education of... people over a period of time now that once everybody buys in, and it doesn't matter what your background is, if you call it out, it really is that peer pressure right across the community. And I know now, president of Wynyard Footy Club, like what the kids get, you know, in their whole career, you know, we would have got more than that by half time.
Yeah.
So it's just improved out of sight, and it's just a credit to what football's done and how we've grown as a community more generally. I just think it's fantastic for the kids today, you know, can just go out there and enjoy their footy.
Yeah, I think it's everyone's a lot more educated. There are going to be blips on the radar. We saw that with Taylor Walker, and we see that occasionally where people cross over that line, probably just to have a moment where they just weren't thinking. But I think the awareness is there, and I think that's where it wasn't when you guys were coming in playing your football in the late 1980s. So I think that really has stepped it up. And of course, you got involved too as the AFL Multicultural Community Ambassador too. So that must have been good. So you really felt like you had a voice then too.
Yeah, look, it was just an opportunity to try and see, you know, how we could connect with I was really thinking about, you know, some of the new Australians that were coming, some of the Sudanese and some of the I suppose we see with some of the industry, some of the engineers and things like that, Pakistani and these sort of the Asian people coming and thinking, how can we get those people connected to, you know, not just football clubs but to cricket clubs and the like. So So it was just one of those opportunities to try and see how we could get new Australians connected to footy.
Before we wrap it up, Kent, what do your brothers do these days? I've seen Stephen around. I don't know about Grant, but what are the pair of them up to?
Yeah, so Grant and Stephen have both got small business in the car industry.
Right.
They both live in Burnie, probably 5 minutes drive from me, and they're both working hard. They've both got you know, growing families, and they've both got good health. And we probably, if we don't talk every day, we'd talk every other day, I reckon, maybe several times a day. So we're still very, very close.
And yourself, you're not in the car game. What do you do?
But I work in mental health. I work for the Tasmania Health Service in a service called CAMS. It's called Child and Adolescent Mental Health. Once I finished sort of footy, I went back and did a couple of degrees at university.
Yeah.
And so I sort of work in a tertiary service with acute and complex mental health issues for children and young people.
Kent, it's been an interesting chat. Thanks for taking the time to catch up with us on the Sideline View. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Michael. My pleasure.